You're very welcome into the second hour of today's 9 till noon show. I do hope you're very well. And we've got another busy 2 hours on the way, so stay right where you are. You might have heard a little earlier on that the big mega summer draw is still ongoing, which is great. We've got three fantastic prizes to give away, 15 grand in total. There's a draw on Friday on David's show, or the Jive Time show. There's a draw then the following Friday morning on Lee Gooch's Naughty Alarm Clock, and then 10 grand to give away on this show next Friday week, if that makes sense. So you've still got three draws, three big chances to win. The tickets are still available. By the way, the winning ticket of the 10 grand very well may not have been sold yet. We simply don't know because it's an open draw. So if you want to be in all three draws, you can get onto us right now, 07491 25000. We'll get your number into the draw drum, or you can go onto our website, perfectly safe and secure. Tickets are from just a tenner. One's 15, five for 10. Obviously, please only buy them if you can afford them, and have a bit of crack with it, because it is good fun if you win, I can tell you that. I haven't won much myself, but there you go. So three draws, two and a half grand, 10 grand, and you could join our previous two winners as well. So if you want to get your tickets, maybe you haven't heard of it before, get in touch right now. On 07491 25000. On the issue of defective concrete blocks, hello Highland Radio, I'm listening at the moment. On the defective block issue, I wonder if you'd mentioned the issue of the 40-year guarantee. You know, we did talk about that in the past, but listen, we can get into specifics as well. Greg, should Donegal County Council supply a mobile home to people who have a SI house that's falling down for the people who live in it? Should they supply a mobile home on site of the house? The corners of this house are completely gone. I just covered them with felt to try and get this winter out of the house where my two sisters live. And they had sent in some really quite horrendous photos of that situation. What is it? 80-odd people have been moved out of social housing. Thousands are affected. I know people who are living in the most terrible circumstances in an SI house. People are developing respiratory illness. There's just generally more illness in the home. Externally, maybe the home is not terrible, so they're probably facing 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, who's to know, years in that home. It makes it very, very difficult. I'm not sure how many houses could accommodate a mobile home on site, but if it's an option, perhaps maybe that is the way forward to get people out of that terrible situation. Morning, Greg. I personally think with the tragedies that took place recently that the first place these kids should be offered help is at school. It'll help educate young people on the causes, symptoms and how to get help for depression, anxiety and worry. They need to know what services are available to help them if they need it and how to spot if someone's in trouble. But there aren't always signs of people being in trouble. And, you know, maybe we need to approach it in a different way. You know, people can make decisions that there's no prior indication of, that you would never imagine such a thing might happen. I don't know how we discuss it with people. You have to discuss it really carefully. I think maybe should there be more of a focus or a conversation on, you know, not necessarily the very kind words that obviously follow, and maybe more on the devastating impact it might have on those that are left behind, without attributing any blame or anything like that there. And I'm really trying to choose my words carefully, but we need to talk more about what's left in the wake of a tragedy such as suicide, for an example, what a family might have to go through, how the long-term impacts of that. You know, maybe that could be, if there's more of a conversation or an understanding of that, maybe that could be the difference in a moment between, you know, someone dying by suicide or not. I don't know. There's never a right time to talk about this, by the way, because unfortunately these types of tragedies happen all of the time, so you could never find a window whereby it might not seem insensitive for us to talk about it. So, like, I think definitely about people reaching out for help. Obviously, schools aren't open during the summer or for a couple of weeks at Halloween, etc., or Easter, sorry. But I just wonder if we need to maybe help younger people understand the consequences, the finality of a situation and what might happen thereafter. because someone might make a decision in a moment, and if that knowledge is in their head, maybe they might consider that decision. I don't know, but I'm open to assisting in any way, us moving forward to try and find something that might help in this situation. That is all we can do at this point, if that makes sense. We found a British passport yesterday at the bottom of On Green on Fort. It's been left in Letterkenny Garda Station. Okay, so it's, I don't know if people on holiday, they may be from here, of course, but if they were on holiday, for an example, if they're listening to this show. So if you've heard anyone who lost a British passport, get in touch. We can maybe pass it on. When are you going to mention the person that had to be disarmed with a knife yesterday on the main street in Letterkenny? A bit more important, I think, at the minute. There's a, I don't know the circumstances of that. I have probably a rough idea if someone's asking us why we're not talking about it. We can't interfere in ongoing stuff. People can go on social media and say whatever they like, right? But we can't start having a conversation about someone's guilt or otherwise whilst an investigation is ongoing or an arrest has been made. We don't know the circumstances at all. So that is literally just the rules. Now, if you want to get on to... if you want to get on to Commissioner Mann and the various other agencies that sort of police what can be said on radio or not, more than welcome to do so. But we literally can't talk about certain things at certain times, regardless of where someone is from or who they are or their gender or whatever it might be. If an incident has happened, someone can go on social media and say whatever the hell they like, right? And many people might agree with what they have to say. But we can't presume something. We simply cannot presume something, someone's motivation, someone's background, someone's mental health, someone's not mental health, or whatever. We simply can't, because it's an active Garda investigation. And if we start interfering in that, if something were to go to court, that is a solid defence that could get something thrown out. How could someone get a fair trial, for an example, if something was being discussed as a fact, when the maybe were mitigating circumstances or whatever it might be? We are literally bound not to be able to do discuss certain things in certain ways, where someone can say whatever they like on social media and then a day later backtrack or whatever it might be. I've seen it in the past, and that's fine because they can, and we can't. Right. You might have heard reports over the weekend from a Pakistani doctor based in County Donegal. They say they're considering leaving Ireland after being racially abused and threatened during an alleged incident this week. She said she was followed and threatened by a man after leaving work in her car last Tuesday evening. A vehicle started to follow her and the driver began beeping the horn before cutting her off. She initially thought it might have been road rage, but realised it was something more serious when the man followed her down a cul-de-sac. His intent, she said, was to isolate me in that cul-de-sac and then probably physically assault me. When she realised he was following her, she drove back onto the main road where there were more people. The man again followed her and got out of his car. The doctor said the man called her the C word and a number of racial slurs she did not want to repeat. I didn't roll down my window. I didn't come out. He was trying to tempt me out of the car, said the doctor, who was based in Letterkenny. She said the man made violent threats and aggressive gestures. She filmed him on her phone and called the Gardaí. The doctor, who did not wish to be named, said the incident lasted 20 to 30 minutes before the man finally left. And this is the latest in a series of reports of people mostly living and working here for a long time that have been the target of either verbal or physical abuse. Thomas Pringle's a member of United Against Racism at Donegal. Does anything about that story surprise you, Thomas?
Unfortunately not, Greg. And that's the sad thing about it. I mean, it's disappointing that it's in Letterkenny and in Donegal that this has happened, but it's happening all over the country, unfortunately. And as part of that story further on, they interview a doctor from Dublin who is part of the support group. And I mean, basically, he's saying that they're seeing an increase right across the country in these type of attacks. And that's very worrying. And it's obviously very frightening for the people involved. But we all should be very worried about it, you know, because I mean, the people are doctors who are here to help us and help our, and Letterkenny wouldn't keep going without the doctors that have come in here to help Letterkenny and help the people of Donegal. And there should be, we should all be concerned about it, and we should all be acting to ensure that that doesn't happen and it doesn't be continued. And unfortunately, I think we have to look at how social media promotes this kind of activity, and as well, and by clickbaiting, and people are sharing these around and getting more and more likes and bait, and that's what the reason for being. And indeed, we're seeing local media as well is now promoting these, allowing, giving these a platform to spout this hatred, and this is, unfortunately, Greg, is natural outworkings of it, because that's where this hatred leads. It leads to attacks on innocent people who are going about their job trying to help the people of Donegal.
I get where you're coming from, and I also note, you know, party comments there, and I want to talk about the issue of racism and not media coverage and what have you, but, you know, there's two options here. That you can have one thing happening in this space, for an example, what me and you are doing now, and then you can have something completely different happening in a social media space, and never the twain shall meet. Do you not think there is an advantage in, you know, if people are expressing certain views, challenging those views, and allowing the majority of the population to ratio those views, so to speak? Because up until now, or heretofore, you know, we are seeing more and more of this type of dialogue and this type of stuff on social media, garnishing thousands and thousands and thousands of likes and shares. There's no counter-narrative from the state, and there's no real challenge to it, because they're in an echo chamber in social media.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is no counter analysis to it from the state. Unfortunately, what we see is that most political parties in the state are moving further to the right and to meet this. And you know, and the view seems to be that the way to actually deal with this issue is to placate it and to become as right as the right themselves. You know, and history has taught us that doesn't work. That isn't the way to actually deal with these issues. You know, and there is a balance. Like, I understand what you're saying in terms of media might want to present the arguments and maybe have a debate on each side of it, but that is actually platforming and giving a credence to their arguments. And basically, the arguments of the far right are totally spurious, and there is no...
We're in a situation now whereby in the past you had two newspapers and one TV channel, and that was it. The bottom line is now there is a whole different media, and not platforming on what's deemed as the mainstream media is not working, because this because these movements have popped up in virtually every country in the world, and then themselves transfer into mainstream politics from the platform built off mainstream media, or built off the mainstream media platform, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you see, the thing about it is, like, I mean, I don't get this comments on my social media platform. On my Facebook page, I don't get this far right commentary and stuff like that there. On my Twitter page, I don't get it. You know, it's the algorithms that are used by social media. So basically, if you follow one of these things, they'll throw 10 at you. So it's a very limited group that are getting this all the time and on social media.
Unless you were to engage and counter some of that, how do we ever get to a point whereby, you know, there is some sort of consensus or some sort of, you know, deprogram of people, if that's what you want to say? You know, if you are in your echo chamber and another group's in a different echo chamber, and both are so equally strong, if you know what I mean, where's the conclusion to that?
Well, the reality is, Greg, that unfortunately, that I don't think there is a reasonable argument that you can have with racism on media or on social media and stuff like that there. Now, there is what you can do is you can talk to people on a one-to-one basis in your everyday life and that, and talk to people, because the vast majority of people that look at this media and share this media are not racist, and the vast majority of people are just seeing what they see popping up on their pages, and, you know, and by talking to people and on a one-to-one basis. But now, that's not... it's not sexy, and it doesn't suit local radio, and it doesn't suit media and that there, because they're into mass communication. But mass communication doesn't work in terms of the far right and what they're actually doing, because basically Their arguments are totally spurious anyway, and you're just giving credence to their arguments by actually platforming their arguments.
Yeah,
and
I get you, but there's elements and attitudes of the far left that doesn't align with the mass population points of view. You know what I mean? But it's perfectly fine to bring someone
I don't hear the far left being platformed.
Hmm?
I don't hear the far left being platformed.
You know what I'm on about, crossover stuff.
But I don't hear them being platformed. Like, I mean, I don't hear far left people being platformed on radio and on television and stuff like that there the way I hear far right people being platformed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think part of that, Greg, as well, is because we have seen the major political parties move to the right. And actually, some of the far right arguments are becoming mainstreamed arguments.
True. That's demonstrable.
Rather than standing up to and putting an alternative out there, which is important.
Yeah. One thing that is being done very successfully is conflating people's concerns about immigration into this country with anyone who's brown. And yeah. I don't mean that in any way disrespectful, but that's been very, very successful because I've spoken to representatives of various communities on this program, and they equally can have their concerns about how immigration is handled in this country. But everyone who looks a certain way is being grouped as the enemy in inverted commas, which has happened very successfully. Again, when it's impacting on real people's life, how do you address that without challenging it?
Yeah, well, I think what you have to do is actually say, you know, that immigration is not a problem in Ireland. The number of asylum seekers is what immigration is deemed to be. The number of asylum seekers is not significantly large in Ireland. There's an awful lot of immigration that comes to Ireland who are not through the asylum process, and people who are come to work here, make their lives here and live here, and that's what the asylum seekers are trying to do as well, make their lives and contribute to
our society. I don't understand why mainstream parties aren't trying to support the legal, working, second, third generation, you know, communities in this country, though? Is it because it's not politically popular to do so? Like, why aren't we seeing more of the big parties coming out and sort of saying what you're saying in terms of the importance of people in the health service and other areas of life and society as well? You know, I just wonder, is it because they don't want the online abuse from it?
Possibly it could be because they don't want the online abuse, but it also could be because they just see they're being driven by focus groups and by platforms that are looking at people's views and stuff like that there, and they're not actually living and driven by the real life. And I think it's also easier. It's easier to kowtow to it and maybe give a wee bit to them rather than actually challenging it and say, no, that's wrong. That is the wrong way to look at it, and stand up for people and stand up for their own communities as well too. And the reality is too, like the other thing is that the far right are challenging and blaming the immigrants for everything that's wrong in this country, where it's actually the major political parties that are responsible for everything that's wrong in this country. So they can't actually challenge what the far right are saying without actually pointing to themselves and saying this is because our government has failed, and that's why these issues are getting importance. You know, and so it's a diversion for them as well, and it suits them.
Yeah, I just don't see any solution to this, though, unless we have more nuanced conversations so that people who aren't racist but have concerns have a home, you know what I mean, whereby they can respectfully express those concerns rather than sort of finding that in a space that the likes of yourself don't want anyone to engage with, if that makes sense. That's not a having a go at you, if you know what I'm on about. But you get where I'm coming from, because, you know, there's the Middle Ireland, or however you want to describe it, they're dealing with pressure on rental availability, rental accommodation, the cost of living and everything else, school bus places and all that kind of stuff. And they're seeing perhaps maybe other people getting what they perceive to be beneficial treatment, but they're not represented, or the voices aren't being heard, and they find solace in certain parts of the internet.
Yeah, and the thing about it is too, Greg, that quite often a lot of those concerns aren't grounded. It's years ago since I was involved with the Asylum Support Group in Donegal Town, and at that time there we were getting complaints from saying that people were going in and getting their hair done in Letterkenny, being paid for by the Asylum Department of Justice, which was total spurious and total lies. And but that was being out there, and people were saying it was only our concerns, we're decent people, and all this kind of stuff. And it's wrong, like, and people, they may have concerns about immigration and about the immigration of the country, but if you look at it rationally and you look at it, we are a country that's way underpopulated. We have plenty of room for everybody. We need people to come and
But just
support us.
In relation to, I get where you're coming from, but do you not believe that not space in terms of fields and where people could live, but in terms of our resources, be it the hospital, almost half the staff, by the way, are not Irish in inverted commas, though many of them are Irish now, if you understand where I'm coming from. But GPs, school places, dental, all stuff, obviously, you would hope that the government would invest in greater more and there'd be more capacity, but we are where we are. Do you not see how people can be rightfully concerned that there are Donegal has taken in so many that our resources are stretched to the detriment of everybody?
They're actually helping and our lack of resources and actually deal with the issues and support the people that we have because we haven't got the resources. They're not the cause of the issue of the why there's a scarcity of resources. Ireland is deemed as being one of the wealthiest countries in the world. So why do we have a lack of resources? Why do we have not enough doctors? Why do we have not enough housing and that there? It's because of government decisions. And the reality is, Greg, that it's because of the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael politics that make those decisions in this country at the minute, that we don't have those resources. But I mean, nobody is turning around and attacking Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael politicians or following them home and threatening them or anything like that there, because and keeps that going by them allowing that argument to go on and continue and attack those vulnerable people rather than look at what has actually happened in this country. We are living in a country that's in the top 10 richest countries in the world, yet we cannot graduate enough doctors, we can't build enough houses, and why is that? It's because our government doesn't do it
In
enough.
relation to sort of the left side of politics, do you think sort of we're in a bit of a horseshoe situation at the moment where by, people that I would know, people that I don't know, right, but I know there would be politically similar to you, that they've sort of hardened their attitudes and language online, in that what I've seen now is if someone doesn't like what I say or do, I would have thought you'd come in for sort of criticism from those right leaning and it could be right quite pointed and quite, sharp. And I've noticed over the last year or so a real sharpening in language and attitude and from the left. Have you spotted that yourself at all?
I
Because
haven't thought
sometimes you can
that.
almost become what you oppose, I think.
There's a danger in that, all right, and there's a danger in terms of and maybe it's a natural human reaction when you're being attacked to actually put up that the attack back or something like that there. But I must say that it's not something I've experienced at the moment, but maybe I'm not looking for it either.
No,
Well,
because you're
I'm
not
not examining it.
you're in a space whereby you're in like-minded people, where I'm somewhere in the middle and I can be a lightning rod for left or right, so to speak. I just thought it interesting in that, some of the commentary directed at me from the left in inverted commas, didn't tag me, didn't mention me directly, but was clearly talking about me, sort of inviting pylons. And I was thinking, all right, okay, here we are, horseshoe politics. But there you go. Anyway, I think, the less of that we see from everyone, the better, because we all just have to live together and we have to figure a way through this. But
yeah, and the solution is not to be attacking doctors on their way home from
well,
work,
certainly not,
or not to be attacking workers who are working doing a job,
but that's completely unacceptable. And I hope that everybody listening to this thinks that for any woman, forget about doctor or where they're from or whatever, to be followed by a man who gets out of the car and shouts abuse at them is completely unacceptable, completely unacceptable, and attacking anyone based solely on their race as well is just I think the majority of people still think is completely completely unacceptable. The only problem is that I think there are people in society, Thomas, who maybe always harboured these points of view, or maybe said it over a pint at the corner of a bar in a pub, but now, because of the online commentary, feel that they can start sort of acting this stuff out in the real world and be seen as some sort of a vigilante hero.
Yeah, and what was online commentary has now been mainstreamed onto the media as well, and that they do, and that's the danger, because it makes people feel that it's more and more acceptable to do it, and maybe that, I don't know who that person was that attacked that doctor or that, but maybe that person was strengthened by the fact that they're listening to the radio, they're looking on Facebook, and they're seeing all this talked about, and this is the way to go, and that's what they do, and I mean, and that's what's wrong, and that's what's dangerous, and that's what we have to think about when we actually make comments and talk and stuff like that there, and that's the responsibility that we have to make sure.
But we had a recent conversation on this program about the actions of some individuals, and the overwhelming online response to that was that this is unacceptable. You cannot be doing this. That would never have happened without that conversation, whereby people felt empowered to say, we don't agree with this. That's not, but I don't think me and you might ever agree on that. And also, I don't really fully know where I'm at in that space either, because, you know, I'm trying to be constructive, and you're going to misstep at times, or you're going to get it right at other times. We simply don't know. But all we do know is people having potentially saved lives, or even if they haven't, on the way from home from work, being abused like this simply because of what they look like. I don't think that's an Ireland that anyone really wants to belong to.
I would say, Greg, just to all your listeners, just to stop and think before they actually look at the stuff on Facebook and stuff like that there, and think about it, and, you know, and think about the reality of the situation, that this isn't what is causing our problems in this country, and we need to move beyond that.
Do you know what's kind of separately interesting, and finally, if this doctor were to move, you would wonder where they might move to, because the way the world is going, they might experience very similar in Poland or in France or in Britain or in the United States, and probably other countries that I can't think of at the moment, that you can see this type of activity occurring in, you know, on a regular basis. It is a very changing world. It's not Donegal. It's not the country. We do see this, you know, in many different parts of the world. I'm actually speaking with sympathy to this doctor, as if they were, might they go that they feel at home and safe to do their often life-saving work. It's not to...
In the article in the paper, they were saying that they were going to move back to Pakistan to be at home, I suppose, and amongst their own people, that it wouldn't, the likelihood of that happening wouldn't happen, you know. And you know, it's interesting too, when you look at in Ireland, like, I mean, all of us Irish people have lived in England and places as well, and experienced similar type reactions as well, I would say. I mean, I remember I worked in England in the 80s, and I was called Paddy more often than I was called my name, and my name was on a tag badge on my jacket, but yet people saw fit to say, yeah, call me Paddy constantly. Same as,
yeah. And I was working over there, I got an awful lot of that, and it was from all different communities as well. It wasn't just, you know, white English, it was Asian, black English as well. I just thought that was notable from my experience, and that just goes to show that, you know, we all need to get along. All right, Thomas, listen, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. Take care of yourself. That's Thomas Pringle there, who's a member of United Against Racism Donegal. Racism Donegal. Look, we're just, you know, we have to discuss these things, don't we? Let me know what you think. 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. The bottom line is though, people are so entrenched in their views that the left and right are hardening. And maybe now there is no space almost to platform to people's points of view and have a debate on it, because, you know, those who are anti-immigration or aspects of it, I just don't see their views changing. And then those who, you know, are left and leaning towards the hard left, in inverted commas, I don't see any shift there either. So where does that... Is it the majority that's in the middle? Is it like 70% in the middle, 15 sort of harder left, 15 harder right? I don't know. Anyway, It's a minefield in this chair, I'll tell you that for nothing. Back with more after the break. Are you an unemployed woman looking for a fresh start and a new direction? Well, Rural Enterprise Skillnet's fully funded Women in Construction training programme is designed just for you. Brenda Donaher. Brenda Donaher is the manager at Rural Enterprise Skillnet and is with me in studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
Just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. Right, okay, so this is a real opportunity for someone to go, do you know what? I'm going to either pursue a dream I've always had or I'm going to pivot because this could really work for me.
Exactly, yeah. So, Greg, this is the second year of the programme. We're about to take in our fourth cohort for the programme, and it's been hugely successful, specifically for the Donegal region. So the course is targeting women who particularly want to work in the construction sector, or like you said, want to come into a new career path. And it's fully funded. This is a ESF-funded course, which is co-funded by the Government of Ireland and the European Union. So we're very fortunate to have secured this funding for the region. So I'm here today just to put a call out to anybody, any woman who is interested in a construction career path, to contact us and apply. The course is due to start here in Letterkenny on the 22nd of September. And it is really just there to equip women to start a career. We have work placements set up and we have businesses, construction businesses, who are really eager to take women on.
There's very few opportunities whereby it's fully funded. Mm-hmm. There's the proper training, the proper on-site experience and pathway to employment as well in a sector that is going to be incredibly busy for a very, very long time. Things like this, opportunities like this don't come across very often, I would argue, Brenda.
Absolutely, and especially in the Northwest. So, like I said, for us to have secured this funding, it's a three-year cycle. So, like I said, we're in year two now. So we would like to see this funding keep coming our way. The construction essentials are involved. You will qualify with 14 certificates, safe pass, new entry to site dumper, working at heights, confined space, IOSH health and safety, first aid responder. So, I mean, there's just a huge amount of opportunity here and one that is very costly for any employer. So we are very fortunate that our member companies involved in this programme are very anxious to work with us. And, you know, they not only get the opportunity to receive these certifications, but we also take a very holistic approach to the programme. So we ensure that participants are coming out with, you know, good soft skills such as communications, working in a team, being assertive in what is a male-dominated area. So we
work
with them.
But we are seeing more and more women in it. And my experience, having spoken to women in construction, is that we live in a different society, that they are treated obviously as equals, as you might expect. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? That there's no, and I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it happens in any industry. There's no sort of default toxicity there or what have you.
No.
That, you know, the men and the managers are very keen and very welcoming to seeing women enter
100%.
The sector.
100%. We've had, like I said, this is our fourth programme, and all the participants in the last three, every one of them were totally embraced on sites. There was no issues. They were part of the group and that was it. You know, it didn't matter, male, female, you were there to do a job and get the work done and, you know, just totally embraced in the job. So we have no issue with that whatsoever. But the challenge is there. There's no point in saying it's not, but it's
yeah,
much
of course,
better.
But, I mean, this programme is completely tailored to women entering
Absolutely.
Construction. So
Absolutely.
All of that is addressed. This is not a general programme. It's specific to
yes.
women entering construction.
Exactly.
But what the woman has to bring to the table is, though, a genuine desire and excitement for a new opportunity.
Absolutely.
Something that sort of, you know, will stimulate them to say, right, I really want to do this and this is a great opportunity. This is about connecting a person with their ambition.
Exactly. And we're there to give them the tools to do that. But like any job or any career, you have to be accountable for yourself. We'll give you the tools to set you up. You go into the work experience. It's up to you then to showcase your work ethic and what you're willing to do so that you get a job offer at the end of that.
I mean, you are going to be connected with a company that is likely recruiting at the same time.
Absolutely.
So just to be clear, it's a full-time program. It is 4 weeks work placement following the completion of a 6 weeks class and practical training. So, you know, that's a relatively short window to get into an area with great earning potential. You know, I mean, obviously it depends where you begin in any job, but there are certainly career opportunities within the construction industry.
So it's 6 weeks intensive training, you know, so we pack a lot into those 6 weeks. Then you go out to your 4 weeks work placement, and like, I am there to support you through this whole journey and beyond. You know, I'm still in touch with a lot of the participants from last year. You know, they keep me updated on where they're at. A lot of them some of them are still with the company that they went on a work placement with. Some of them have moved on and took up other opportunities with other companies. Some have gone further afield.
Do you find those that have participated so far of finding careers in construction for the most part?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, some are still working with their original work placement. Some have moved on. Some have decided that, you know what, I actually really love, there's two actually have moved on to go into further education on specifically on health and safety because they've actually really enjoyed that part of it.
Which wouldn't have happened without
the job because the company that they went to gave them an opportunity to see what happens within the construction sector in relation to health and safety. So they've moved on in that direction, which is great, and they're getting supported in that journey. And, you know, hopefully they will see further job opportunities from securing additional training.
Do you need any sort of base education to qualify for this?
No. And you basically just need to be unemployed, have a full driver's license, transport, be a resident of the Republic of Ireland and be willing to work. Mm. Be willing to come in, give this your full 100% commitment. It's 10 weeks that can potentially give you a job for the rest of your life.
And over 18?
I mean, if you're on, you know, you have to be unemployed. So if you're just after coming out of school,
you're that's
not really,
fine.
Yeah.
I didn't think of the technicalities as involved as you are. The point being is that, you know, when we were having this conversation, as we do every year post leaving cert, and this is a perfect example of opportunities that are there for you to achieve a brilliant career or a particular direction. You know, even if maybe in that school environment, you know, you weren't able to apply yourself to achieve your maximum ability. So this is just an example, by the way, of how you can start a fantastic career going down a different route. So when does it begin? This has to have a limited amount of space, right? Because you're so involved that this can't be for 1,000 people, clearly, right? So you're going to have a certain amount of spaces funded. I don't know if you want to divulge that.
So it's fine. For each program, we run two each year. The maximum is 8 per participant, per program. And that's purely based on because of the content that's involved. We actually can't accommodate any more than that. I wish we could, but we can't. So the maximum is 8. So it's due to start on the 22nd of September. We're very focused on the type of participant we're getting. We really want somebody who's genuinely looking for a career in construction and that's willing to work. So we have an interview.
An interviewing process.
There is an interview process because of that. And the interviews are due to take place on the 5th of September.
Well, I don't think that's a bad thing because, you know, schemes like this obviously continue to get funded based on success. So the fact that there is a, you know, an interview process to ensure that a person that starts this, whilst, you know, no one's got a gun to their head, but whilst they start this, that there is an outcome for them.
A commitment.
Because there's a lot of money, resources.
It's a lot of money. It's a
the
huge
businesses
investment.
Are having to buy in. You know, they're rolling the dice on this to some extent as well and trusting the scheme. So how does someone find out more information?
So the best thing is to go onto our website, Rural Enterprise skillnet.ie. On the homepage, you'll actually see testimonials from previous programs we've ran, the girls themselves talking about the impact the program has had for them. And then there's a booking link, and you just simply fill out the form. I'll be in touch with you. We'll set up an interview, and it's as simple as that.
Have a go with it, because Brenda will certainly guide you in the right direction. And maybe it's not for you, and maybe that can be discovered in the process too. Right, so you need to be unemployed. You need to have a full driving license and transport. And outside of that... You really want to be interested in working in construction.
Exactly. Yeah. Just, you know, I mean, there's a lot of girls out there, like you just said, they've been through the school process. It wasn't for them, and that's perfectly fine. And we're just giving them an opening to something that hopefully will set them off on a really good career path.
Super stuff. Brenda, thank you so much. That's Brenda Donagher, who's manager of Rural Enterprise Skillnet. The website is ruralenterpriseskillnet.ie, or if you want just to double check anything with us, give us a buzz here, 07491 25000. Thanks so much, Brenda.
Thank you.